Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
First of all, I want to ask you something, Carolyn Maloney, my old friend. There's this wild couple that's been seen around Washington named Fannie and Freddie. And you probably know more about them than anybody else. You know all the gossip. What is the gossip about Fannie and Freddie?
Well, as you know, they were bailed out to the tune of $185 billion. They're now owned by the federal government, by the taxpayers. They've been paying back their debt. They'll be out of debt probably this month or at the end of this month. And many economists say that one of the things that we can do that would help our economy more than anything is housing finance and reforming Fannie and Freddie and having some certainty there. So that investors would come back into the housing market. Mark Zandi, who is the economist for Moody's, he testified before Congress that that housing finance was 25% of our entire economy. That's huge. Housing finance in terms of related industry and putting up housing. So one area that Republicans and Democrats agree on is that we have to do something about housing finance. The question is, how do you do it? Corker Warner, a bipartisan bill, has been floated in the Senate, would preserve the 30-year fixed mortgage while also protecting taxpayers. And it creates a system very similar to the FDIC, where there is a guarantee, but you never get to it. You go through various different levels. First, the investors have to take the first 10% of the losses. And if they exceed 10%, then an industry guarantee fund would kick in. And that would be able to bear losses even greater than the losses Fannie and Freddie suffered.
So you have to stop for a second, Carolyn, and just tell me, because, you know, I should know more than I know, exactly what do Fannie and Freddie do?
They finance housing on the secondary market, and they provide liquidity and money to help build these housing projects. And they sell securities on the secondary market.
Now, what do you mean by the secondary market?
Securities.
So in other words, if I go to my bank and I say, I want a mortgage, they give me a mortgage. What does that have to do with Fannie and Freddie?
Well, it used to be that that mortgage stayed in your bank, and you had an interest rate for 30 years. But now you can go to a Fannie and Freddie, and they can sell that mortgage, they bundle and sell them on the secondary market, putting a lot of more money and liquidity into financial institutions so that they're able to provide more loans. It used to be we were the envy of the world in terms of the number of people that we had in housing. 64% of our citizens owned their own home. Now it's fallen to roughly 61%. But that was achieved by keeping the 30-year mortgage interest rate low and having a fixed rate on it. And that's basically it. The big fight between the Republicans and the Democrats are over the 30-year fixed mortgage. And the Hensarling bill, according to Mark Zandi, the economist with Moody's, would raise mortgage rates by at least 90 basis points, or roughly $135 a month. So that's a lot of money over 30 years, and people don't believe that people can afford that. And it's not necessary. It's unacceptable to have high interest rates on the 30-year mortgage because people won't be able to afford it, and it's unnecessary because there are proposals, such as the bipartisan Corker-Warner bill in the Senate, that would preserve the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage while also protecting the taxpayers.
Now, why would the Republicans, I take it they're on the side of, okay, let the rate go up. Why would they do that?
Because they do not want any government involvement whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They want the private sector to come back into the market, which Democrats want too. But we also want to keep the 30-year fixed rate affordable so that to keep the interest rate down. And if you have government guarantee, and I would say it wouldn't be there in the first place, but if you would go through various levels before you'd get to it. And if you did get into a government money being necessary, there would be a clawback, as the FDIC has, In other words, the financial institutions would have to put money back into the fund and make it whole again. So I think it's a good plan, and I like the Corker-Warner bill because it does keep the liquidity in the market, and it does provide for the secondary market for selling securities and mortgage-backed securities. But it also would put liquidity in, but protect the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
Somebody told me that the Democrats were responsible for the great housing bubble because they wanted everybody in a house, even if they couldn't afford one.
Well, they relaxed. There's enough blame to go around with a lot of people. They basically relaxed lending standards. There were huge swaths of the whole mortgage industry that weren't regulated at all, such as AIG's financial products. Their insurance side was regulated. They didn't have any problem. Then they opened up a London office that put out all types of risky products that they innovated, but their regulation didn't keep up with the innovation. And a big part of it were the subprime loans, where they relaxed the standards to the point that the joke in New York was, if you can't afford your rent, go out and buy a home. You could have bought a home without any information about having a job. You didn't have to put any money down. They had something called no-document loans. You would be able to just go out there and buy anything and not document how in the world you're going to pay for it.
I've never understood one thing, Carolyn Maloney. Why is it that the Fed gives money to the banks at 0%, and the guys and gals in the barrel pay 5%? How's that work?
The Federal Reserve's role is safety and soundness of the banking system. Without the banking system, you have nothing. Christina Romer, the chief economist under Obama, testified that the shocks in this last recession were three times greater than the Great Depression. But we kept our banks open as opposed to shutting them, as they did in the Great Depression. If you don't have a bank, you don't have any commerce. You can't pay the people that work for you. You can't write checks. There's no commerce. So there was a big focus on keeping the financial institutions alive so that they could continue to provide loans and banking services to the American people. And we managed it so much better with the FDIC that we put in place after the Great Depression, the OCC and the Federal Reserve as regulators, but they were huge areas that were totally unregulated, particularly brokers with these subprime loans or no-doc loans that were then packaged and sold on the secondary market and were basically worthless. It used to be you would go to your bank and you'd make the payment and you'd have to put a certain amount down, a certain amount every month. But then the ownership, some of the times they couldn't even figure out who owned the properties because the mortgages had been sold so many times. So basically Dodd-Frank brought in unregulated areas and regulated them and forced the banks and the lenders and everyone involved to have some skin in the game, that if it goes under, they take a loss. So that, I think, is an important improvement.
Carolyn Maloney, I can't tell you how much we love you for showing up. And, you know, you don't have to do this. And you do it because you are, as always, committed to letting people know what's going on. So
I want to tell you, Alan, how much I've appreciated your public service, too. Teaching is a wonderful profession, and you've excelled at it. And to have this show, I can remember you used to have former Governor Mario Cuomo on every Saturday, and I would listen to you.
We did, and you had to get up very early in the morning in New York City to do that. It was a great show, and he was really one of the great raconteurs of all times. Thank you, Carolyn. We'll be seeing you soon, we hope, and good luck on everything you're doing. It's really been a remarkable career. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.